We are back. Now, I know you've had an opportunity to listen to some of these stories from Ezell Blues, who is a prostate cancer survivor, as well as Crystal Jordan, who is an ovarian cancer survivor, and then Tiffany Cochran Edwards, who's talking about her father, the late Johnny Cochran. So I'm going to bring it back to you, Ezell, because you're twofold right now. You are a prostate cancer survivor, but then you also are going to be a caregiver, or you are a caregiver for your son. So let's talk about how difficult it is, one, being someone who's having to deal with cancer, particularly being the man of the house. Men need to be seen as strong and all of that. Talk about that.
Well, in this case, I was being the caregiver and the responsibility. I had to, as I said earlier, make a decision quickly as far as how I was going to take care of the cancer because it was at such an early stage. And I think I had more sympathy and more care for my son than my own cancer.
Really?
Yes, because it's hard when your children are diagnosed with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were many nights and days of tears, not in front of him.
Of course.
It was always a peaceful joy and love and kindness when I was in the hospital with him. And the cancer actually came two or three times. We went and we were excited about it, and it came back and left, and it came back again. But that experience with my son just opened a different world to realize how important life is.
But let's talk about you. So, and I know you're the caregiver for your son, but
sure.
What about you?
Well, the fact that I made a decision early enough to take care of the cancer, my regular checkup shows that it's not coming back. It's gone. It's done with.
Were you ever worried that
never.
You were going to die? Were you ever worried? Did you have some fall down moments?
I never allowed it to do that.
Hmm.
I never allowed it to do that. In fact, when the doctor came into the office to tell me I had cancer, I was smiling. I was.
He probably thought you were crazy.
He thought I was crazy. Then I looked at him and said, "Doctor, are you okay? I'm fine.
Okay.
So let's just make a decision as far as what we have to do here."
I will say, as being a breast cancer survivor myself, I'm going to celebrate 7 years in July.
Wow.
Of breast cancer. Praise God. Hallelujah.
Yes.
I'm not talking in tongues.
one
of the things that I will say, you know, and I would love to be able to say that I was strong enough to where I didn't have fall down moments or I wasn't weak.
Sure.
But I'm going to tell you, because I think I have a little bit more drama within me somewhere.
Right.
I did have fall down moments or a moment. But then it was always important for me as a person who was being taken care of to ask my family members and friends who were there for me, how is what I'm going through affecting you? Because it was important to me. Crystal, as far as you were concerned, how difficult was it for you, particularly since you're wanting to be superwoman and you've got two children, to allow other people to take care of you because you simply could not physically do it?
That was really hard. Honestly, it sounds probably odd to some people, but that was probably the hardest thing for me to do, especially when you have little kids, you know, because I didn't want them to be afraid. I thought that I was hiding my fear from them because that was my main
goal. That never works.
And it did not work because they knew that, you know, something's wrong with mom. Something's wrong with mommy at that point. And I remember my after I had surgery in May 11th of 2007, and my son's teacher that year said that he would come to school, and he was really quiet. And he was, you know, they asked him what was going on, and he was saying he was afraid his mom was going to die. And that bothered, you know, that bothered me because no matter what you say to children, they watch you and they feed off of your behavior. And I was afraid, and unlike, you know, Ezell, after I had surgery, the least little pain, you know, up for a couple of years, I was, oh my goodness.
It's what is it?
Yeah, it is, because it was definitely, mentally it was difficult to deal with for me to understand that, you know, you don't have control of this.
You just have to try to be strong and will yourself through it and let people take care of you. We have somebody online too who wants to ask a question. Hey, Jackie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
I'm good. So what's your
Great.
Question?
Well, my question is, it was so coincidental how I actually heard the ending story of Tiffany Cox about her father. I'm right across the street from Clark, Atlanta. I am a student here, full-time student here, and I have an aunt that is in stage 4 of brain cancer.
Mm.
The last holiday visit, she came here. She was in great spirit, and I just want to know, you know, how long. You know, she's in California as well, so that made it even more coincidental.
Mm, wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just want to know how long, because it's tearing me up.
Right.
You know, and that's all. I just want to know what are some of the things I should be expecting, you know.
How to prepare himself, right. Prepare yourself. That's a good question for you, Tiffany.
Sure.
Because I got to be strong. I have to be strong.
Absolutely. You know? Has she told you what type of tumor she has? Has she been specific?
Well, no, not specifically, because I have her sister, which is the baby of the family. Mm-hmm. She's actually taking care of her. Mm-hmm. It was just so happened that she had to retire from her job and moved to California from the East Coast to help take care of my aunt once she was diagnosed.
Okay.
So we know that, you know, it was in stage 4, and make it so bad, and then this is so traumatic. It's like when she first was diagnosed, she was on her way to be treated. She had to get chemo and radiation done.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how the phrase goes, when it rains, it pours.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good friend of the family that was taking her to the doctor, and a guy side swiped them 80 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
So she went through a lot. She has been through a lot, you know.
So basically, you know that it's stage 4, but you don't know where she is in her treatment area. So Tiffany, go ahead and talk about what he needs to do as a caregiver or family member to get ready.
Well, you know what? I think you're doing it. You're trying to equip yourself with the skills you need. You just have to be there for her. Maybe she just wants to talk. Maybe she just wants to share. You know, I can't tell you specifically because everyone's journey is different. you know, it was helpful for me just to ask my dad, how are you feeling today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he'd have great days, some days not so good. But the most important thing is just to talk. Let her know, you know, I'm thinking about you. I love you. I can't tell you how many times I told my dad, I love you, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it would make him smile when he was unable to communicate with us. And I would, you know, he would draw pictures, anything that you know that's going to just brighten her day or just lift her spirits, you know, just go for it and do that as much as you can.
And then sometimes I would guess that it's easier, and maybe it's important because you don't always want to talk about the cancer.
Right.
I know for me, I didn't want to talk about it all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wanted things to be as normal as they could for me. So we could just talk about normal things.
Exactly.
I like to watch funny, silly shows. I didn't want to watch anything that was too emotional for me.
Yeah.
And then I also found that people would always ask if there's anything you need.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you're in that moment, you can't think about what you need.
You don't
so
really
you just,
know.
Just do make a basket of fruit or, you know.
It's just the thought. She just wants to know, you know what, he's thinking about me.
Exactly.
He's in school and he's in Atlanta and he's thinking about me. That brightens my day.
Absolutely.
You know, I hope that answers your question.
What worked for you, Crystal?
I think that sometimes you don't want the friend that is like, oh my God, are you okay? Or the ones that are so sad for you.
Right.
Debbie Downer.
Yeah.
Right. And I know they're not trying to be, you know, I can understand, but that's the reason I had a hard time sharing it because the hardest thing for me was, of course, telling my children and telling my mom, because I remember my mom was just seeing how hurt she was, mm-hmm. hurt me.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, just sometimes a person being there, just coming and sitting there and just being there, talking about something that doesn't have anything to do with what's going on,
mm-hmm.
Definitely, you know, was a help. And I know that's difficult for a lot of caregivers to do. I think you have to pray, and get yourself together because it's when a person is going through that, for someone to look at them and start crying. I remember my mom looked at me and started crying, and that was just like, oh. And I understand as a mother, I would do the same thing. Yeah, but mm-hmm. friends just would be like in kind of shock, you know, especially at that age in our life. We just didn't expect that. But that was hard, you know, to be on the other end of that.
I had a friend who did that as well. Don't forget, we're still standing by. We are waiting for you to call us and ask your question if you'd like, 404-880-9255. Again, 404-880-9255. One of the things I found that was so interesting when I finally told a few friends that I had breast cancer, and I was pretty together when I told people, but I would always warn them, okay, look, I'm about to tell you something. I'm going to need you to be strong. Don't fall out. Don't cry. If I'm not crying and if I'm not falling out, you don't do that either. And so I had a friend who did start crying. And I was like, how are you going to be? And I guess because I'm so crazy. I'm like, how are you sitting up here crying? And I am not. And she was like, I'm just. So, and I think from that moment, you know, I know that nobody has the right to tell you how to feel when you're the person that's going through it. But I also recognize that I try to give people a little bit of leeway because it can be surprising. It can be shocking. But then pull it together, because I think for people who are going through the journey, they need to see that you're strong, because they need the strength. They need to see that you're optimistic and saying positive things, because you need all of that to funnel into you. Moving forward. When it comes to your son, Ezell, since you're saying that you were pretty good as far as going on your journey, what are the things that you plan to do for him as his caregiver that you think will help him, particularly since he's so young?
At the beginning of it, the first 3 years were the most crucial years. And I think I'm out of all of his hospital visits, I might have missed one in 3 years of actually not being there with him and for him, which is very, very important. I mean, even if I was on my way, that he would call and find out, Dad, where are you? So being there and being part of the experience for him is a healing factor. Being in the hospital, being in the, I mean, we went to the hospital many, many times in the middle of the night because of his blood count was low. And with the medicine, you know, it was just being there with him and going ahead. He still has a positive attitude. I mean, he has, you know, he's gotten a tattoo now and he's got an earring. And, you know, he's still living life and enjoying life. And I didn't whip him enough to get that earring. But anyway, you know, just being there for him is so important.
Can I ask this question? One of the things, particularly since your parents had cancer and then you had cancer, was there any level of guilt that you felt as a father, knowing that it was possible?
At the beginning, not knowing his symptoms of leukemia, and then he was very, very lethargic in his life at the time, and I thought he was just being a lazy kid. And then when I found out he had cancer, that's when the guilt came in, because I thought I was pressuring him and not knowing the symptoms. You know, I really felt guilty, you know, not knowing the symptoms. But once we found out what it was and what we needed to do, then it became easier to deal with.
One of the things I want to ask you, Tiffany, because I know we all know that we are not meant to be here for forever, and Crystal absolutely touched on it, because, you know, and of course Ezell talked about it. We talked about our mortality, and we're going to leave here at some point. But I think it's something different when you know that it is imminent and you have like a timeline, particularly when you hear this from doctors. So as a daughter, how did you, and a caregiver, how do you process knowing that your father has a limited amount of time? And for people who are listening, how do you help them process that?
That's a great question. All I can tell you is just prayer. All I did was pray. I asked people to pray for us because I have no idea. Looking back on it, I mean, I journaled through the whole process. And just to read my entries, I mean, it's the unknown. But because I think I was, you know, I just kind of knew because he was deteriorating and he was, you know, he was getting worse. And so that's why we had the final meeting with the doctor. And, you know, just hearing weeks to months, I thought, this is it. You know, I got to make it count.
But and when it's weeks to months, I guess I'm trying to put myself in your place. And really trying to process, if it's weeks to months, then I guess for me, and maybe this is you, every day I would be thinking,
today's
the day. Is this the day?
I didn't think today's the day. I had prayed about it, and I said, just let him see Easter. You know, the doctor told us that in December it would be weeks to months. And I said, you know, it has been an honor to take care of him through this process. And that's the other thing. I never looked at it as a burden. It was an honor. And because we were able to discuss anything and everything, at that point I felt like, if this is it, then I'm going to deal with it. But I knew, I said, you know, Lord, just let him see another Easter. So I knew if we got to Easter, it was all good.
Well, let me ask this question then. As it got to the edge of when it was about to be that time, as the caregiver, how does caregiving change at that point? Or does it?
It doesn't change because we see that he's deteriorating, he doesn't know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's just, he's like, oh, you're here again. You know what I mean? You keep coming to see me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I he wasn't really verbal towards the end, so I don't know. But I think deep down he was like, okay, something's happening. My whole family's here.
Mm-hmm.
But it was so peaceful. He was not in a hospital. He was at home. And so it just happened to be when I was there on family leave. So we were all there.
Is that a hard process to be in the room as you watch your father transition?
It was difficult because, you know, that's it. You know, that it's coming to an end. But it was also so beautiful and peaceful that he was able to go around family members.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you couldn't ask for anything better. There were no tubes. There was nothing. And we were all there together. Mm-hmm. So that's all I can hold on to, that my whole family, we were all there together.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember that the day he died was picture perfect. It was, there was not a cloud in the sky. Mm-hmm. And it was almost as if, you know,
God ordered
this day for mm-hmm. him to receive him.
Mm-hmm.
And I how could I be, you know, I just...
Mad at that?
I couldn't be mad at that. Mm-hmm. It was just the perfect scenario. And again, you know, humor, he'd had all the in and out that he wanted. So I felt like he was, you know what I mean? He was so
satisfied,
happy.
Yeah.
And we had had such good discussions. And I did think of a story. My husband just texted me. You know, he was in a wheelchair. And the other thing that caretaking is the relationships you have, because we were newly married. We'd mm-hmm. only been married 6 months when he died. So it was a lot of stress on my husband.
Mm-hmm.
So you, as
shout
a caretaker,
out to your husband.
Shout out to my husband. As a caretaker, you have to have somebody that you can,
of
you know,
course,
because
lean
I'm
on.
Being strong for you. I'm smiling with you. And then I go home and, like you say, fall apart because
right.
I'm like, what is going on?
Right.
But my dad loved to go to the movies. So we were taking her to the movies and my husband was trying to get him out of the wheelchair and he bumped his head on the car. And I'm thinking, he has a brain tumor and you bumped his head.
Yeah.
And my husband was like, I'm sorry. I've never done. So we all go through this as a family mm-hmm. together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 9 years later, we remember that because mm-hmm. I'm like, you bumped his head, you know. But these are the things that sustain you.
Right.
You know, you may think it's trivial, mm-hmm. but these are the things that as a family, because no matter what, you come together
right.
as a family.
Right.
When one of your
absolutely.
Own is fighting for his life and all the trivial, silly stuff.
It doesn't matter. You throw it out
matter.
The window.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, I wish I could give you a better answer, but just I knew that it was coming
mm-hmm.
and just prayer. That's all I can tell you. Just praying, like, Lord, help me get through this.
Mm-hmm.
It was much more difficult the months after that.
Of course.
That.
Yes.
Don't forget the number's 404-880-9255. Again, 404-880-9255. When we come back, I want to talk to Crystal about how she handled, knowing that there's a possibility that she could have died, particularly being so young. We're going to get to that part when we come back. Again, 404-880-9255. We'll be right back.